Atheist Nomads, episode 113, Indian ex-Adventist and Black ex-Baptist with Jamila and Chris Randall. As a note, the conversation continues with bonus content available only for patrons. Find out more at patreon.com/atheistnomads. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode number 113. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
Hey there. Hi there. Ho there, neighbor.
And joining us today are Chris and Jamila Randall. Chris is an aerospace engineer, and Jamila is an author, speaker, activist, and actually an old friend of mine.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome to Atheist Nomads.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it's been interesting. A couple months ago, Jamila and I talked a bit. Catching up a bit since we went to high school and college together. And yes, this is the same high school where we had the apocalyptic survival school. So Jamila would have been right there with me. I think camped on the other side of the river, if I remember correctly.
Yep, girls and boys on opposite ends.
Aww. Split apart just like they should be.
And you both have very different backgrounds. Yes. So, Chris, let's start with you.
Okay.
What's your basic background, religious and otherwise, and how did you get to where you are now?
So yeah, I grew up in the inner city, South Side of Chicago, and I grew up in a predominantly African American low income community. And my family all subscribed to Christianity in some form. We were, I guess officially, I was raised as a Baptist. And nice. So we attended a Baptist church, although I did attend Catholic school for a couple of years, early years, like kindergarten and preschool. And then once I started going to a public school, we pretty much attended Baptist church. So, I mean, if you know anything about the relationship between the African-American community or the Black community and religion, is that most African-Americans tend to be Christian. So or at least here in the United States. So, that's just in a nutshell, you know, went to church. It was usually very long. I always envied the few white people that I knew who went to church at 11 and were home by 12:15. So,
oh man, for my church worship class in college, we went to two Black churches in Seattle. One was Adventist, and the other one was Baptist, Southern Baptist, to be more precise. And man, they started the actual church service proper at like 10:30. Both of the churches. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done until like 2:30, and the potluck wasn't done until 4 or 5.
It's an all day.
It was nuts.
Come on, I was raised Southern Baptist. We went to church 4 to 6 times a week, twice on Sundays.
Ooh.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Wow. I had it much easier than Jamila, I think, when it comes to that, though.
Yeah.
All right, so Jamila, what's your background?
Well, about 5 generations Seventh-day Adventist. My family is from South India, and specifically language group is Telugu. And so I grew up with you know, in a very small, narrow bubble of Indians, specifically Telugu-speaking Indians, who were Seventh-day Adventist and missionaries from, I believe, the U.S. and Europe, came to the village that my great-great-grandparents were living in and basically baptized everyone there. And I think it's been about five generations. So,
wow.
It's deep in there. I have to say the majority of my family, I can probably count on my hand how many people are not Adventist in my family.
Damn.
Yeah. So
wow.
It is a
Do you know what year that would have been that the missionaries came over?
You know, I wrote it in shameless plug, my ebook called God, Love, and Indian Food, which is on Amazon. And I wrote a little foreword in there that gives a little history, and I'm drawing a blank on the exact year, but I want to say like 108 years ago or something. I think I did the math. And
okay, so right after 1900?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. That's pretty early.
mm-hmm. And I still have a very close community of friends, family, acquaintances that are involved and affiliated with the Adventist Church. And so that's still an everyday part of my community and the people I know, and of course my family, which is large. I have a big fat Indian family. Just like the Greeks. So it's extensive, and you can't separate it. It is ingrained deep.
So about when did your family immigrate to the U.S.?
1985.
Okay.
And so I was a year and a half old, and they came over with several other families that were Indian and Adventist, and they have basically built up a community here in the States all over. And of course have kind of huddled around the various Adventist centers, which are around Adventist main churches and main hospitals and universities. So they've kind of created their own subculture here in America, which is where a lot of them have decided to settle and retire, and they want to be around other Adventists like them. So that there's a big influx around those, you know, Loma Linda, California, Silver Spring, Maryland, Berrien Springs, Michigan. They're in those pockets.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious. How do you and your family get along?
Well, actually, my parents just left. They came to visit from Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we had a lovely 5 or 6 day visit. And I would say it's not tumultuous, because it's really a non-conversation.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the stage we're at. We've had a few awkward questioning moments about, are you going to church or not? But, which is to be expected. But, you know, I've been kind of on my journey out of religion for about 3-4 years now. And so it's getting a little more, it's feeling a little more natural just to be authentic about it now, and not even have to defend myself or worry about too much explaining. It's just kind of like, nah, not going to church, but you know, nice. You're welcome to, and we'll see you later. So it really has been pretty smooth for the most part.
You just kind of like this is a subject we don't need to talk about. Let's just be family.
Yeah, we've found some common ground. We've still been able to go on vacations and enjoy each other, and you know, do the normal family stuff. Except,
nice.
You know, like I said, Adventism is so intertwined into my family's everyday life that it is hard to kind of separate it. So There's still a big elephant in the room.
It's kind of like Mormons. You never see a Mormon that's not smiling. It's kind of weird. <and creepy>.
Yes. And then, Chris, how about your family?
My family, I have a pretty small family compared to my wife's, but most of them still reside in Chicago Chicago and Louisiana are the two largest centers for my family. And they are all still pretty hardcore. Well, I say hardcore Bible thumpers or hardcore Christians, but if you know how Christians go, right? I mean, they don't necessarily practice what they preach all the time. So I mean, they're definitely all about going to church and they do a lot of praying, but they're not too evangelical with it, I guess you can say. So it only gets challenging, I guess, for me during times of crisis. You know, I think my family and I, some of my closer family members, we bumped heads a little bit a few years ago when my mom passed. And she was diagnosed with cancer. And during that time, there was a heavy reliance on the church family, so to speak, and prayer and things like that. And I didn't participate in that. You know, it just wasn't authentic for me. It did not. In fact, it felt the opposite of helpful. It felt like we were, providing, or they were providing, this false sense of hope for the dire situation that my mother was in at the time. And so I think that was probably the only time I really bumped heads with my family regarding our difference in beliefs.
That's a really painful time too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a challenging time.
All right. And Chris, sticking with you, what was your deconversion process like?
That's a good one. It was, let me see, I don't know if I can put an exact date on it. It happened gradually, but I guess if I had to describe what it was like, it was slowly waking up from a bad dream or something. It was and you're trying to figure out, you wake up and for those first few minutes you're not really sure if you're still dreaming or if you're really fully awake and aware. And then once you realize that you're aware, you have to start getting some clarity to your actions. And, those first few steps out of the bed, you're trying to really be very intentional about where you place yourself. And so I guess that's what it felt like. It was fuzzy. I distinctly remember being a Christian and then I remember not being a Christian in that area in between.
About how old were you when that process was going on?
So I'd say it started roughly, roughly 12 to 14 years ago. So I was probably in my early to mid 20s. I'm 37 now. So, I know, right? I just dated myself on the internet here. But, about 14 years ago, somewhere around there is when it started. And, it started with a lot of questions at the time. I was studying engineering and I was really sharpening my analytical skills and my critical thinking skills. And the more I sharpened those skills, the more I took, philosophy courses and had discussions with intellectuals around various universities, the more I realized that I was being, and I'll still a phrase from one of my favorite authors, Sam Harris, I was being intellectually dishonest with myself about my spiritual belief system, yet I did not allow that in anything else that I did as far as anything else that I studied or believed in from an engineering perspective. And so I had to question that, like, why is it that I can go with little to actually, no evidence or bad evidence at best about my spiritual beliefs that have huge implications for my life, yet I require testing and evidence and analysis of that evidence for everything else in my life. And that's when it started to change.
I don't know. I can't say that I know you very well, because this is our first chat here, but you know, I'd say that's more on the strength of your character, because of being able to come out and question. I'm sure the philosophy class has helped a bit, maybe even a lot, but engineering is usually the safe bet for a lot of religious people, because, you know, there's not a lot of introspection in a math class.
True.
So,
but at the same time, with all the math that you're learning lots of logic and critical thinking. And why would you use a lesser standard of evidence to base your life on than something you're building?
Exactly. Exactly.
That would seem to act. I would actually think that engineers would be the ones that would require the most cognitive dissonance to stay religious.
Goodness. I need to walk you through the shipyard.
Oh, I'm not doubting that there are religious engineers. I'm just saying it doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right, but they're able to compartmentalize a lot more versus like a philosophy professor or something like that. I don't know, Chris. I've put a lot of our shipyard welders up against your NASA welders, so.
Yeah, well, you know, we're in the South here, in the Bible Belt, man, and it's I mean, it's interesting to watch that dynamic play out. Sometimes when I hear some of the religious banter around work, yet I don't know, it's funny to watch them switch to, you know, talking purely about scientific evidence and how the data doesn't support a decision like this, Chris, and 10 minutes later on the way to Bible study. So it's like, oh,
oh yeah, it's great. You know, I actually have when I got hired into my office, it was a Mormon bishop as my boss. He had his direct underling doing security, got an evangelical in the back office that has a 1.5 by 4 foot wide sign saying he has risen up on his wall of our government office.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
<It's> lovely.
Wonderful. Yeah. 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 We still, up until, actually it's still happening in some areas. I mean, they still pray before events in our government facility as well. And I always found that quite interesting.
Hmm.
I actually was just on our local King 5 news a few days ago because we have an assistant football coach that prayed after all of the games with the players.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's actually a nuke engineer in the shipyard here. And
wow.
Yeah.
We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads. Send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. Jamila, what was your deconversion process like?
Well, you know, I got divorced about 5 years ago, and I was married to a Adventist. He was a pastor's son from Seattle, Wesley. And during that time, it was a freeing, I guess, of a lot of things in my life. You know, a marriage, obviously, but then just allowing myself to kind of have the freedom to explore my thoughts, my beliefs, what I thought about basically everything. And I had met Chris, who was not religious, when I met him. And, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, Jamila, you married a non-Adventist, and that's why you're not, you know, religious. That's why you're not Adventist anymore. And I hate to put that burden on Chris, but it was actually very important for me to be outside of the bubble and to be in a relationship that didn't require or just assume those things that I was, you know, taught as a child. And so being in a relationship with someone who was, one, not Adventist, but also not religious, just allowed me the freedom to to explore without the judgment, without the self-judgment. And so I think I got divorced and like I got an iPad the next week. And I feel like I just explored Google for the first time or something. But I got my iPad and I remember like, you know what? I'm not going to church this Saturday. I'm going to just, you know, stay at home and chill. And I think I just went from website to website. I found like exadventist.com and all sorts of things about the church and other people who had very similar sentiments. And, you know, you feel so alone and then you go online and you search for something. You're like, oh, I'm not alone. There's thousands of people who feel the way I do. And I sort of just started finding solace online, actually, because I didn't really feel safe to share my thoughts, my doubts, my questions with people in my family or friends. And so I did a lot of just soul searching privately. And then Chris and I realized that we both really enjoyed the philosophical discussions. And I just felt safe for the first time to voice all my questions. And I still have a million questions. And I'm finally okay with not knowing the answers. But my deconversion probably started around the time I was 28, and I'm 31, about to be 32 next month. So last few years, and it's been, you know, a journey that's not over. And so I kind of am excited because this is just the beginning of what I'm learning. And I'm very interested in mindfulness and self-awareness and emotional intelligence and all those things I'm exploring outside of just, okay, religion doesn't work for me anymore. But I'm also just learning a whole new concept, critical thinking, things that were just not introduced to me up till this point and that I've had to go seek out on my own, and really enjoying filling my mind with new thoughts and knowledge and just allowing myself to learn things that may be taboo or in the Christian community, things that are just not acceptable. You know, I check out books or buy books that, you know, would make my family and friends gasp. But, you know, it's not being afraid to read books. And honestly, that was something that I had a fear of, because in that small bubble, you know, there is a fear of learning things that are contradictory to what the church wants you to believe. And so it's not acceptable to just go to the library and check out books about other religions or non-religion. I have the Atheist Manifesto upstairs on my bedside table. And it's just, it's amazing to me. Like, you know, books are banned. There's a lot of things that are not acceptable, not okay. And so I just feel this freedom finally to read what I want to and learn what I want to without repercussion. So I'm definitely at the beginning of a long journey.
Awesome. I got to ask one thing though.
Sure.
And I'm totally not asking you to spill any dirt, but I've always seen preachers' kids to be either on the straight and narrow or like real party people. Which one was the X?
Actually kind of middle of the road. I know the stereotype, and I've met I've met several. My mom is a pastor's kid, you know, so
the PKs, yeah.
My grandpa was a pastor. So you know, I have to say they come in all spectrums as well. So I didn't have the total rebel. So yeah, definitely was ingrained as a pastor's daughter-in-law. You know, you're definitely have, there's some standards and a shoes to fill. So that was part of my life for a while.
Yeah. And in the comment you left on our Alex Jules interview, you mentioned that there's a big difference between, you know, how you fit in with the Indian community as an atheist versus how Chris fits in with the Black community.
Yeah.
Could you two elaborate on that a bit?
Sure.
Sure. Well, there's not a lot of room for atheists in the Black community right now, so it seems. So I think typically what happens is if that conversation never arises, people just look at you with kind of shock and awe. And I had an experience recently where some associates of mine that I've known for several years just discovered that I was an atheist. This maybe was 3 weeks ago. And we were having a conversation and we were sitting around a table. And so when one of the people asked me about church, and I said, "Oh no, I don't go to church. I'm an atheist." Like, everybody stopped. It was like, you know, the record scratched and everybody stopped. And one guy who was an old friend of mine, I've known probably 6 or 7 years, said, "Well, I'll be damned. You learn something new about folks every day. How could you possibly be an atheist?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean? How could I possibly be an atheist?" I said, I don't eat children or anything like that. I just don't believe the same thing that you do." And all of the questions came out about, "Well, what do you think happens after you die?" You know, I would respond with things like, "Well, why do you think something happens after you die in the first place?" You know, like, you know, and it just, it quickly escalated into somewhat of an aggressive conversation. And so, you know, I just kind of dialed it back a little bit and left it, you know, kind of left it open ended, like, "Hey, you know, everybody has their choice to believe what you want to believe." And so it's just interesting, though, that I don't know very, in fact, I only know of a couple. One of them happens to be a family member of mine, a couple of Black folks that I have in my circles who are atheists, and it's just not very common. I mean, there are probably a couple of different, you know, theories as to why that is. You know, if you look, I mean, the same reason when I look at the missionaries who went over to India to Jamila's family's community there. I mean, I honestly, and not to take a shot at Christians, but I mean, I think there is a correlation between poor, underdeveloped communities and the infiltration of religion. You know, I mean, you see it on the Christian side. You also see it on the Muslim side when you look at what's going on in some of the countries in the Middle East, where you find, you know, very poor, uneducated areas. And you have, you know, radicals of whatever religion that kind of move in and, you know, provide certain things like, you know, food and education and healthcare. And then before you know it, you just grow this community that subscribes to that religion. And I think they tie it to the religion. And I honestly just feel like I feel like the Black community in some ways have been a victim of that process as well, of kind of manipulated in a sense by, you know, religion infiltrating communities that needed support, that needed help, that needed access to certain things that they weren't getting access to, and the churches provided that, and before you know it, it just became a part of the culture.
The
communities that have the least to give are the ones that are taking advantage the most.
Yep.
And using Adventists as an example, you know, currently in the U.S., roughly 1/3 of Adventists are white, 1/3 are Hispanic, and 1/3 are Black.
Hmm.
That's despite the fact that white people make up more than 2/3 of the national population.
Hmm.
They're doing a lot better in minority, typically poorer populations. And there's 1 million Adventists in North America. There's 18 million worldwide, and most of the rest are not in Europe or Australia. It's
Latin America.
Latin America, Africa, India, the South Pacific.
Yep.
Hmm.
And aren't they very underrepresented in the higher ups?
Very, very.
Yes.
Pretty much not represented in the higher ups.
Well, yeah. I don't believe that's coincidence. I mean,
yeah. It almost seems like, because like that real missionary effort that was really starting up right when imperialism and slavery were both kind of drawing towards a close. Seems like an underhanded way to keep it going.
Oh, I've always thought that was a big way to keep people under control.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Personally, like, I didn't obviously grow up in India. I came over when I was a baby to the States, but just stories I've heard and experiences I've witnessed is, you know, Adventists do have a strong healthcare focus, a strong education focus. And so in the areas where my family is from in India, they have a hospital, they have schools. And it is basically required that you attend one of the Adventist schools and then that you actually become employed by one of the Adventist church employers. So whether it's working for the hospital, working for the university, working for the conference itself, the Adventist conference. And so there was this expectation that, you're baptized, you're educated in the system, and then you work for the system. And it's really just, it is set up systematically for you to just stay in that bubble.
Yeah, and the snake's just kind of eating its tail.
Yeah. And there's consequences if you don't. I mean, it really was not a lot of option there. And, it is a male-driven society. And so I know stories of women who were in terrible marriages, abusive marriages, couldn't leave because if they were to get a divorce, which is, frowned upon in the church, they'd lose benefits, maybe even their job. And so it's tied so closely to your economic wealth and your financial stability, the staying within the church, working within the church, and then not even being able to leave a abusive relationship. So I've seen it. Basically, it's a net over your whole life.
If I can just comment on that, though, an interesting observation, though, is and one thing I guess I do have to give credit to the Adventist Church for, at least the Adventist Church appears to be somewhat of an economic driver and supporter for the Adventist communities that they serve, unlike what I saw with the Black churches. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, but I never experienced or witnessed the Black churches really being economic engines for the Black communities. What I did see were a lot of Black churches actually taking advantage, and to this day, taking advantage of poor people in Black communities with respect to this whole gimmick, I call it, of prosperity preaching, and the fact that so many folks in those communities are giving way more than they can afford to give to the churches and church causes, and in return are getting very little to nothing. So at least the Adventist Church are providing resources that turn into income for their church members.
Sometimes.
No doubt, though. That prosperity gospel is probably the most evil thing out there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I can't say that the Adventist Church does that as well for Black churches in the U.S., the Black churches very much have a second-class status within the denomination.
Yeah.
And I know there's some parts of the world where, yeah, they raise people up out of poverty to their own detriment. Korea is a great example of that, where first generation, the person is very devout. Second generation, they give their all to the church. Third generation, they're affluent, well-educated, and out the door.
Interesting.
But that first generation was in abject poverty.
Yep.
And for, to be able to make that transition in 3 years is pretty astounding.
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, three generations.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. And I always give the disclaimer that, I I actually had a wonderful childhood, and I don't know about your high school experience, Dustin, but, you know, Milo was a golden time for me. I enjoyed my boarding school experience, my Adventist education from first grade all the way through, you know, four-year university. And there is an emphasis on education. It might be in conjunction with the emphasis that Indian people have on education. So I kind of got a double whammy there. But I do give that disclaimer because, you know, I was able to have a private education, really great opportunities from music and, you know, activities and ski trips and things that just, I guess, are part of my memories growing up in the Pacific Northwest in a private education environment. And so to me, you know, being in that bubble, it felt fine. It wasn't traumatic. It was just getting to adulthood and getting to a place where I could step back from the bubble and think critically and ask myself some questions. I was able to say, you know what? This stuff doesn't make sense to me anymore. This stuff doesn't fit intellectually for me anymore. But I do give that disclaimer because I really, I'm sure a lot of people have had more traumatic experiences with, you know, fundamental Christianity or whatever brand of religion they grew up in. It wasn't the case for me. I can say that I'm grateful for what felt like a very normal and healthy childhood.
Well, for Jamila, I'm curious, does Seventh Day, do they have any subjects in school that are like taboo or majors that are frowned upon in education?
Not that I'm aware of. I went to, you know, Walla Walla University in Washington State, which tends to be a little more liberal than some of the other Adventist universities. So
which made it a bit harder for me to get a job afterwards.
Yes. So we kind of had the full gamut of a liberal arts college, but
you know, I don't know if your question was maybe implying that maybe more scientific or technical majors would tend to drive people away from the church, but I can tell you I'm like living proof that I work with nothing but scientists and engineers, and this seems to play no role whatsoever in people's ability to still subscribe to religious
beliefs. Yeah. Oh, and Walla Walla's biggest program was engineering.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Exactly.
See, yeah. I'm telling you, religious engineers, I'm telling you.
They also had a lot of science majors, most of whom were planning on being doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how many of them were like geologists or...
I don't think there was a geology major.
Exactly.
There was biology, but that was for med school.
But no, my point was more like, Christian scientists, where they don't want to have like I was just pointing towards like a geology or like hard sciences that, you know, I'm definitely frowned upon.
I'm not aware of if there's any like taboo majors, but you know, growing up in Adventist elementary school and of course middle school, you get the science videos where they tell you, all right, ignore the reference to billions and billions of years. And I know there's a Family Guy clip and, you know, they dub it out and say hundreds and hundreds of years. And so it's, you just kind of got, you got accustomed to just ignoring the things they said to ignore about real science.
Now, I don't know if, you know, I can't say this based off of any data that I've collected, but I bet there is a correlation though, between certain majors. I would say, like you talked about geology, maybe anthropology and maybe physics. And I think you tend to see, I do know a lot of physicists and many of them are atheists. I don't know many geologists. I know a couple, and I don't really know what their religious beliefs are. But I think there may be some correlation between particular majors. There's some things, there's some fields of study, some bodies of knowledge that once you acquire them, it is just impossible to deny.
that anthropology is non-existent in the Adventist educational system. Physics departments tend to be very tiny. They mostly exist, like at least in the case of Walla Walla, they exist for people who want to take astronomy for their science credit for their generals, or for engineering majors who need a couple of physics classes. That's what the department was there for. They just happened to have a few people that actually be crazy enough to sign up for it.
How many disciplines are biology related though at Walla Walla?
Biology.
Yep.
Okay, but
it doesn't really get past that though.
They're like,
More specialized.
There's a marine biology master's program.
Okay, but that's still dealing with pretty much current living things, not prehistoric. Okay.
I do know that they do teach the scientific facts of evolution in some of the early biology classes.
Because I remember you saying that their evolution books, the stuff they had on evolution was like really outdated, but they still kind of had it.
Now, that was for my class in the seminary, Issues and Origins.
Ah.
And so that was specifically geared for pastors.
Yeah, you started down the road to pastordom.
If you like the show, consider giving us some financial support. To make it really easy with one-time donations, or to support us on a per-episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon, find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask. Please, think of the kittens.
Going back a little bit to what you're saying about, what our educations were like there. For me, it was, academically, it was fine. It was socially that I had trouble because it was just the fact that I was in third grade. I was the weird new kid from Eastern Oregon at a tiny little school, and I got bullied, and then I was just the kid that everybody bullied. So by the time I got to Milo, I didn't know how to make friends. And so it was a very lonely experience for me, just like, the rest of my childhood.
Right.
But it wasn't the school's fault.
Right.
At least not Milo's fault. But then one thing that was definitely interesting was out of our graduating class of 65 people, I think there was only three that didn't at least start college.
Yeah. I mean, the emphasis to graduate and move on to, undergrad and beyond was definitely there. It's just ingrained that education is, you're not just satisfied with the high school diploma. So that's a pretty good percentage, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I think the stats are something like half of Adventists high school age, members or children of members do attend Adventist academies, and the vast majority of people who attend Adventist academies do go on to college, whether it's and about half of them go do go on to Adventist colleges, if then the rest usually to community college.
Well, there's kind of a stigma if you don't go to an Adventist school. There's a big judgment put on parents who send their kids to public school. I saw it, in my family and acquaintances, and there's just this, either there's this judgment of, oh, you couldn't afford it, or, you're not religious enough. You're going to allow your kids to be influenced by, public school kids and public school teachers. And so either way, it is very much encouraged, if not required, that you do whatever it takes to send your kids to Adventist schools.
Yeah.
So with so many, that's an interesting statistic that you brought up about the number of people who attend Adventist academies and kind of their progression through the education system. That would lead me to want to believe that at some point, like you mentioned about Korea, at some point, the Adventist church would kind of implode on itself with people getting more and more educated. But I don't really see that happening either. In fact, it sounds like the Adventist church may be growing. And I don't know if that's propaganda that I may have heard from the church, or if that is true. So I guess I have a question just to kind of throw out here, because that's interesting to me is there as much of a correlation between education and one's questioning of their religious beliefs, or is there something else there that pushes a person to start to question their beliefs and maybe even leave church altogether?
I would definitely say both. In my case, I was just the annoying little kid at like six or so, asking how did all the creatures fit on Noah's Ark, getting kicked out of Bible school, Sunday school, and I got to sit with the adults. But, you know, I was calling myself an atheist to myself when I was about 13, so wasn't so much education on my part at that time. But definitely, the more education a person gets in general, I'd say the less likely they are to be a believer.
Yeah, and the Adventist Church does a good job of trying to inoculate their children from reality. There was the middle school science texts were from the General Conference, and I think like half of eighth grade science was creationist propaganda.
For sure.
In my biology class for high school, I was at my junior academy, we just straight up skipped the chapter on evolution.
Wow. Oh, wow.
We had to use the state mandated textbook because that is the state of Oregon. But yeah, we just skipped chapter four, and the teacher piled on extra homework for chapter five to make sure we wouldn't have time to go back.
Mm.
And when you're getting it every week at church and every day, you know, 5 days a week at school, the propaganda is effective.
For sure.
Until kids get out of college. The stat I remember hearing was that half, this was like right before before graduation, they were saying, you know, half of you will graduate and never again step foot in Adventist church.
Mm.
I'm fine with that.
And I would suspect that's underestimating it.
I think like the indoctrination is strong. It starts very young. It's encouraged. And I mean, I blog about all sorts of things that I find to be dangerous and harmful when it comes to religious indoctrination. But, you know, your mind cannot critically think at that young age. And you're giving them ideas and concepts about afterlife and hell. And, you know, these are, you know, they're basically just regurgitating whatever their elders are going to tell them to do. And we take it as, oh, this young person has given their life to Jesus. And, you know, we're so excited about young people getting baptized. And I mean, a 10-year-old getting baptized, I mean, they have not fully formed critical thoughts, and even the process of how to decide for themselves if this is something they want or not. I know as a child, you know, I'm not going to question what my parents tell me. I don't know how to do that, and I'm not trained to do that. I'm trained to take whatever they say at face value. And so, you know, I have a lot of objections to indoctrination of children. But that indoctrination, especially in the Adventist church, starts so early. And it is a culture. It's not just a religion. It is a total lifestyle and culture. And the social science behind it of wanting to belong, of not wanting to leave the herd, that's all a big part of, I think, why there's so many closet atheists in general. You know, I think from some of my blogging that I've done, and I've done a series on life after Adventism, and I've got a lot of people who've commented anonymously or whatnot and have the similar feelings. But again, it's that fear to come out publicly. And so that indoctrination is strong, and that need to belong to a tribe often keeps people from vocalizing their truth and ever coming out of the closet. And so there's a lot of people with private thoughts and private doubts, but we just don't have a culture that allows them to safely feel accepted outside the bubble.
And there's parts of that culture that will never leave you.
Mm-hmm.
I have introduced my wife to Haystacks. And she likes them.
My husband to Big Franks.
I have a can of Linkettes in the cupboard. Lauren does not like them.
Okay, you guys have to kind of share. What are you talking about?
Haystacks are basically a taco salad that you build yourself right before you eat it. And so it's really good for potlucks or big meals because you can have people bring in. I've actually did this for a bunch of atheist friends coming over for a Super Bowl party. We did Haystacks, and I assigned people an item to bring and let them be creative. So I had a pulled pork haystack. It was awesome.
Nothing Adventist about that.
Nope. And the Big Franks and Linkettes are vegetarian hot dogs.
Wait, well, what?
Yeah, it's hard. It's like a software glitch. It's hard to process that a vegetarian hot dog. Like, seriously,
it is hot dog shaped compressed vegetable protein.
Okay,
but here's the interesting thing about it: it's freaking delicious, man. Like,
are you talking about tofurkey kind of stuff?
Oh, so much better than tofurkey.
Just like fake meat.
Fake meat.
You fry up a Big Frank with some like scrambled eggs and rice, and man, I'm telling you, you've got a party.
And Big Franks and Linkettes, the big difference is the Big Franks are a little bit bigger and have a tangier taste to them.
Tangy, right.
Okay. Which from what my uncle has told me about stuff he delivered to Loma Linda Foods, some produce deliveries, they accepted all of it, and a decent amount of it was rotten.
Ooh.
So my guess would kind of be that the rotten stuff goes into the Big Franks to help add that tanginess, and the Linkettes get the fresher stuff.
Don't tell me that. But Wesley, Adventists have a whole line of food products that would blow your mind if you ever went to Apple Valley in Berrien Springs, Michigan.
That's a bold claim, man.
So it is. It is a culture that goes way past religion. It's a lifestyle, and a lot of good things about it, and a lot of not so great things about it. But it is. It's like you never have to leave. You have from recreational activities to what you eat to what you wear. It is taught from the crib.
So yeah, I was raised eating everything from like pickled pig's feet to make my own homemade spaghetti. I don't know, just everything. Oh, yeah. What's up?
I said, oh yeah, pickled pig's feet, man. That's a.
Oh yeah, I'll suck on a knuckle all day.
Oh.
That's also been freeing because now that I'm not restricted by Leviticus, I have enjoyed fried shrimp and all sorts of restricted foods. You know, I don't have to ask if the fish has scales or if the animal chews its cud before I can partake. And so the culinary palate has been opened up for sure.
Oh yeah. So what are your thoughts on bacon?
Definitely amazing food product. I, like I said, that indoctrination is deep and it's really hard still for me to eat pork. However, like I'll order potato soup and it'll have the bacon, real bacon chunks on the top. And I have no problem mixing that in and eating it up. Whereas before I'd be like, ooh, take that back. And it is a little guilty pleasure. I have to say, I understand the love affair with bacon now.
You know, I have to say, I think bacon is an underutilized propaganda to have the Adventist church just claim that God created bacon, they would have had a lot more believers, because they would have converted me right there. Because I could believe that. That's how I feel about bacon.
I get it now. Yeah. Definitely. I definitely understand its power.
And for the two of you with the Adventist, Baptist, African American, and Indian cultures.
It's got to be some great food up
there. All being merged into one house. How's that working out?
Awesome.
Yeah. Like you said, mealtime is amazing. some good food going on in here. But yeah, there's some cultural, you know, so between, it's funny because like, Between Jamila and I, there were like no cultural barriers. It was strange how, like, we didn't see. I don't even know if we really looked at each other as being like of different races.
Labeled.
Like, but between the families, there's definitely a noticeable difference. You know, from you have the conservative Adventist Indian home and the South Side of Chicago Baptist home, and there was some, you know, there's some interesting dynamics that played there, but you know, our families don't really cross paths too often, so
yeah, we're all kind of spread out. Oregon, Chicago, and Huntsville, Alabama, but we're kind of label-less, and that's just part of who we are, and our authenticity. It's just we both I think we both seek out otherness, and so we're very comfortable with learning new things and kind of acclimating. And I feel like, you know, just I've acclimated my whole life. It's just, you just go from environment to environment, and, you know, growing up in a very, very, very small white town of Albany, Oregon, to, you know, a little more diverse in Washington State, where I went to college, and then moving to Huntsville, Alabama, where more Black people than I've ever lived around. And then there's this huge Indian community. There's a pretty big Hispanic community. And so I've gone from, you know, kind of no diversity to quite a bit of diversity here. And for me, it's been it feels right. It's a good fit for me. I don't like necessarily places that are afraid of otherness, and so this feels right for me. And I guess, you know, people say, "Oh, you guys are a interracial couple," or, you know, totally different cultures. And I have to say it, we are. Oh yeah, I have to remind myself that we are. I guess it's just Chris and Jamila. It just works.
Yeah, it's strange how you kind of lose that. And don't get me wrong, I can't deny that yes, we come from two vastly different cultural backgrounds, but I don't know, it just doesn't feel that
weird.
That's strange. Now, if you see me when I have to interact with her family during family visits, that's something you probably love to record and get on your show. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I met Jamila's parents.
Then you know.
Yes. And
there weren't many words said.
No. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a cultural difference between, like you said, the generations, you know, the first generation and the second generation. And that's probably the biggest difference. It's where, you know, where they grew up and got educated overseas, and whereas I grew up and got educated here in the States. I mean, that's a huge difference, and as far as what you can relate to and what you're accustomed to. So the biggest difference is probably generational.
All right.
I always thought it was supposed to be like really awkward when you're like around the, you know, the step parents, though. So that's kind of a requirement.
Yeah, there's plenty of that works.
Yeah, it can be a little awkward anyway, you know. Just even if there wasn't a cultural difference there, it would probably there's always some awkwardness there around in-laws. But.
Well, and one thing I've noticed with Lauren is some of that awkwardness seems to be Adventist. Because with her parents, they're just our drinking buddies.
Nice.
We go and visit, and her mom has beer that she's bought just for me to drink. That she's excited to share with me and make sure I always have one in my hand. And we go see my parents, and they are very much the adults, and we are the children.
Yep.
And it will always be that way.
I think you're right, Dustin. I think that might be an definitely Adventist awkwardness.
Yeah, there was none of that going on here, though. And this last visit from her parents, they opened. We have in our house, there's a little area that's a bar, but it has a door on it. And so when they first got here, they were exploring the house, and they opened up that door, and they saw like three bottles of tequila and a bottle of rum. And her mother turned to her and said, what did she say to you?
Oh, I see where you keep your drinks.
Like, yeah. So, you know, there was no pulling out the bottle of tequila and pouring around the shots for the family. That wasn't happening. So.
However, when Chris's dad visits, he is a wine connoisseur. So there's, you know, that's just the culture and what we do when he visits. There's always a bottle of wine, and it's very much acceptable and part of the dining experience. So it is. It's just night and day, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We dropped him off at church on Saturday morning while we were on our way to the gym. That felt kind of awkward because they really wanted us to be at church, but I was in shorts with a towel around my neck, ready to go work out. But, you know, no TV. We didn't really turn the TV on Saturday. So there's some awkwardness there that I think is purely Adventist.
Man.
Going back to the culinary piece.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried a yellow curry bacon cheeseburger?
Oh, my God. That sounds
no.
It is to die
not
for.
Not yet, I should say. Not yet.
A few weeks ago, Laura and I were hosting a barbecue. It was the weekend our wedding is originally scheduled for. We still have the reservation for the park. And so we had this, you know, potluck gathering for friends. And someone brought, it was Thai curry, actually. But almost everybody took their burger and poured yellow curry on top of it. And it was amazing.
I must try this.
That sounds amazing, and it will be on the menu for next week. We'll have to send you an email.
Yes. And everybody listening, you must try this. Make it happen.
I'll try it, but I've never been too impressed with curries other than Japanese curry, so I'll have to try this.
Oh, Wesley.
Oh, go to a good Japanese restaurant and find some tonkatsu or some katsu curry.
How culturally uneducated I am.
Japanese head curry.
It's a brown curry, and it's so amazing.
What's it called again?
Japanese curry, or like there's a pork cutlet that is lightly deep fried in panko breading, and they'll put a big side of rice and Japanese curry on it. And they just call it katsu curry or tonkatsu.
Okay.
All right.
Oh. I got spoiled. I was over there for about a year and a half, and just love the place and the food.
Yeah,
I would say probably the best curry I've ever had. Jamila, I think your parents brought food as either to Milo or for the International Food Festival at Walla Walla.
Both probably. Well, mostly Milo.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was pretty lucky growing up.
Very authentic.
Yeah.
I've been to Milo once. It seems like a pretty bland place to live.
He
came for our 10-year anniversary, and he was like, "This is a serial killer's paradise."
Oh.
In the middle of nowhere and no cell phone reception. It's a little scary.
Right.
So you went to the reunion.
I did. It was an experience.
We had just gotten married and in September, and the reunion was in October. And I was, like I said, I was excited to get back there. I had a pretty pretty good memories of the place. And so I was like, it's been 10 years. And I did. I really wanted to show Chris the this place I've described to him, that you can't, you know, you have to go there to experience it and go across that covered bridge in the middle of Southern Oregon. And yeah, he was freaked out.
It is the opposite of Chicago, I can tell you that.
Yeah. You know, I skipped the reunion because I was looking, well, for one, on the Facebook group we had going on right then, I wasn't seeming to get much traction with having an alternate reunion at Seven Feathers at the bar. Oh. We do that Friday night during Vespers and then sleep off our hangovers before heading in after church.
Yes.
And the schedule's all church services.
Oh, that's all it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, Vespers.
Oh, yeah.
Friday night church service.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Fine Vespers.
Yeah, like you do.
We stayed at Seven Feathers, didn't we?
We did. We stayed at Seven Feathers Friday night. And
you won like $50 on the slot.
Yeah. I wish.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, one of those other things that I'm sure is frowned upon.
Definitely. Definitely. There's a long list, Wesley. There's a long list.
And how much of the list applies depends on how conservative of a family you're from.
Sure. I mean, Seventh Day can actually be like fairly vegetarian.
Vegan on the extreme.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not happening here.
Yeah. And the vegan potlucks are terrifying.
Oh. The good thing about Indian Adventists is they have delicious potlucks. And they're okay. A lot of them are okay with eating meat. And so I did not have that super strict. I grew up eating meat as well as some of the veggie meat. So it all just kind of glommed together. But I do have several family members who, you know, they don't do the eggs or the dairy.
Oh my.
And that's just no fun.
But if you're going to be vegetarian, you should make some Indian friends because, man, some of the best dishes that I've ever had have been like vegetable curries. They're amazing.
Yeah, you can survive a vegetarian lifestyle with some curry.
Mm-hmm. See, that sounds a lot better than like fake dogs. Faux dogs. Yeah.
Well, it's the difference between thousands of years of perfecting vegetarian cooking versus somebody trying to make a substitute.
True.
So that you have something for barbecues.
True.
And barbecuing fake meat does not work well.
Oh man, you could kebab anything.
No, Linkettes, Big Franks, they just burn. Oh, so you just have singe marks on the sides and they just get dry.
That's it. You want to tell them about fried chicken curry? Fried chicken gongura.
Oh yeah. I mean, I like it all, man. I can get down with some veggie meat.
Yeah, her parents make Indian curry out of the Loma Linda veggie meat.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh yeah.
Man, I haven't even thought of fried chicken in a long time.
Yeah, it just took you back there.
That taste that the broth that it's in has.
Yeah.
Do they do anything with that?
Oh yeah, that's the juice, man. That's the gravy.
Oh,
fantastic! But don't read the label. That's a lot of sodium.
Oh yeah.
For some health food.
Yeah, it's the, and to explain what fried chick is for everybody else, it is a attempt to bake chicken, basically with gluten, vegetable protein, and this weird pseudo chicken broth that's not quite chicken.
Yeah.
It's just really salty and has like a little tang to it. Mm-hmm. It's not even close to chicken.
No, it's terribly deceiving.
It's one of the least accurate, I would say the least accurate fake meat.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as we're done with this call, I'm going to go into my kitchen and fry up a whole bunch of hot cabbage, fried hot cabbage with some bacon in it.
There you go.
Oh. That sounds amazing.
Oh. Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
I had bacon this morning.
You guys and your weird foods.
There's a lot of weird things, man.
Stripples.
Stripples. What the fuck?
You're making shit up now. Come on.
Nope. It's a substitute bacon.
Oh, hell no. That doesn't even sound like fake bacon.
Which is actually more accurately, it'd be substitute turkey bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
He's not making it up, man. I'm telling you.
I used to love that stuff.
What about a wham sandwich?
So I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this. You're talking about like turkey bacon.
Yes.
Yeah. Stripples. So even less flavor than turkey bacon.
Oh, why wouldn't you just fake bacon instead of like faking turkey bacon?
You know, the reason I brought up turkey bacon is it's an attempt to replicate bacon, but it's closer to turkey bacon than it actually is pork bacon.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Because, you know, turkey bacon doesn't have anywhere near as much flavor, and stripples don't have much flavor.
And they have a very fake bacon design. Uh-huh. Is what I would probably describe it as.
Yeah. A lot of food coloring.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh. I still think you're making shit up.
Mm-mm. Nope. Look up Loma Linda Foods.
Now owned by Kellogg. Mm-hmm. All of the Aventus Foods are now owned by Kellogg.
Awesome.
Wow. Except for Little Debbie's.
Awesome.
McKee Bakery.
If you ever just want to entertain yourself, like some good old fashioned humor, just go to like the Loma Linda section in your local grocer and just read all of the different names.
They're not going to have. They may not have that section in Seattle.
Really?
Really? Wait, you said Little Debbie?
No, Loma Linda Foods, the vegetarian food section. Huntsville kind of has a large Adventist population. Oakwood University is here.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not uncommon to find these products in a grocery store. However, in most cities, you're not going to find it at Walmart like we do.
Mm. You can find Morningstar Farms.
Yes, you'll find other veggie
and
brands.
Morningstar Farm was the Loma Linda brand for general consumption.
Got it.
Huh.
Now also just owned by Kellogg.
Yeah, no. Seattle is hipster enough, well, is like ahead of the hipsters. So if it's vegetarian, it's going to be like straight organic and, you know, weird gluten-free. Non-GMO stuff. And yeah,
well, it's not gluten-free, that's for sure.
It's extra gluten.
It is packed full of gluten.
Oh, going back to the Adventist vegan potluck I went to.
Oh,
This was in college. I was having to sign up for preaching gigs, and quickly found out the secret that you can make money on Sabbath doing that. They'd pay you the mileage they'd pay was about double what it cost me in gas. It was still less than the IRS recommended mileage, but. So what I started doing was try to sign up for the most distant one possible. And so one I did was, I think it was north of I-90. Mm. And so it was like a 3-hour drive to get there. And I got there and I was just, my food allergy issues had just bumped up a notch again beyond just a couple of fruits to, I wasn't quite sure what I could eat. And I was at this potluck, and everything was vegan. It was all casseroles. They all had large quantities of gluten.
Ooh.
And
they all had nuts, too.
The most creative ways of making some kind of nut cheese. A lot of cashew kind of not really even close to cheese. a lot of almond, some peanut. Oh, man, it was crazy. And, of course, by the end, I had to take a Benadryl and drive 3 hours back to campus.
Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Potlucks are scary to begin with, so I can imagine a vegan one.
Yeah, when you're a 20-year-old male in college, eat potlucks anything. Are amazing. They want you to eat more and more and more.
Take leftovers.
And there's usually some casserole that has just enough salt and cheese to be good.
True.
Oh, you guys are funny.
This was not my life growing up, but when I first started dating Jamila, she was still kind of Adventist, so I was fortunate enough to get an inside view, a sneak peek at what it was like. And
he didn't run away.
No. I went to church and everything with her. Like, she was so pretty. I didn't care. I was like, hey, this is what I got to do, you know? Sabbath school it is.
All right. I think we are out of time. So what do you guys have to plug?
Well, I have been blogging for a little while, and that's my weapon of choice, I guess. But Chris and I are committed now to a podcast that we've been planning for some time now called Real Talk with the Randalls, and we're going to address religion, race, relationships, and whatever else we feel like talking about. So look out for that. I don't necessarily have a target audience, but I have found that people who are seeking leaving Adventism, who are maybe already unsubscribed but just need some extra support, I find those people to be very interested in some of the thoughts that I share, and so I've connected a lot with that demographic. And so my series on life after Adventism, which is on my blog, JamilaMRandall.com, has proven to be pretty effective, and I hope to continue with the series there on my blog.
Sweet.
Very nice. And yeah, once you get the that first episode of your podcast out, send me a link to the website you have for it, and we'll let our listeners know.
Will do. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you guys are all right.
Thank you for having us. Look forward to chatting soon.
Awesome. For our listeners, we will be back next week with news.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zoom, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.